guys. We got John coming in.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, big fan of Mushroom.
How's it going? Oh, cool. Yeah, thanks very much.
How's it going?
Hey, everybody.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Since short term.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
I was just thinking to myself, because I live in New York, and I was like, I haven't even been in LA for, like, over a year now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Long overdue.
But, you know, now the big question here is your co-star in Short 12.
Oh, yeah.
She goes on, wins an Oscar. What is happening here?
I'm just failing more and more every day.
You should have been the first Oscar winner.
Well, I think it's all working out quite organically. I mean, she was amazing in Room. She's amazing in Short. She's amazing in everything she does. She's a fantastic actress. I'm psyched for her. Psyched for the success.
But now you get to do a James Gunn film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is
and you live
better than an Oscar.
And you live.
I come out on top in a sense in this one, despite what you would think from the character. He doesn't really come across as as like hero material. I think from the get go of the film, but he kind of holds to his moral compass throughout, and somehow ends up becoming growing into the hero role in a way, I guess.
So how hard and fast are you sticking to your own moral compass?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily know if that's for me to say. You might want to ask my friends and family. They probably know more than I. They could probably say with more authority than I can say.
But I'm guessing that you have to have a strong moral compass to play a character like Mike, because this was much more than acting, because of the underlying philosophical debate that goes on.
Yeah, you know, I think that's why the movie works as more than just a... I mean, it would be really entertaining with all the blood and gore and the action stuff. It could totally just be a kind of midnight kind of splatterfest movie. But James has brought in this kind of age-old moral question about, you know, right and wrong, and what will you sacrifice about your own beliefs just to survive? And you know, that's that people have been talking about that kind of question in art for years and years. But I feel like it's one of the reasons why this movie succeeds is more than just a kind of hard and fast blood, guts, and gore kind of movie. Because at the heart of it really is all about that, about having a moral compass and trying to hold to your beliefs in the face of a crazy, larger-than-life, insane situation.
Mm. And then it reminds me of your character from Cloverfield, too, because he was protective of the girl as well, like this one, yeah.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Am I the only one seeing the similarities here? Or,
yeah, it's really, people tell me a lot that they're like, man, you know, I watched you on the newsroom, you seem like such a good guy, and I feel like I've been put several times in the kind of good guy role, and that's great. You know, I love that. I love playing all kinds of different people, but I hope that in such situations that I would do the same thing, that I would do what I believe would be the right thing, which is to be a protector, not hurt anybody, not try and, you know, kind of sell out your own integrity. So yeah, I feel like people see something, and I'm happy to play those roles because I feel like people see something that's inherent in me about I really just believe in treating everybody, you know, kind and good and being generous and loving, and so I feel like that comes out in a lot of the characters that I play sometimes, which is, you know, here it is again with Mike. He's a guy that really is just, despite the everything literally falling apart around him, is saying, no, you know, we'll all die before we start killing each other. Like, we will not be brought down to this level by whoever it is that is controlling this. So yeah, I think there's some similarities in those roles. Mm-hmm.
So we saw Amadea.
Oh yeah.
Can you say her name? She said she had to train her co-workers to say her name.
Well, sure, I think that, yeah, I can't say it as lovely as you just said.
But what was it like? We've seen that she's gung-ho.
Yeah.
You know, did you see that on set?
She's awesome. Everybody was totally, like, fearless on set. Everybody threw themselves into this movie, and, you know, we're doing a lot of physical stuff, and a lot of us did some stunt work. Like, you know, Tony and I have a pretty intense fight scene, and we did a lot of that ourselves. You know, we everybody, of course, had some stunt doubles for some of the more intense stuff. But you know, Audrey and I are getting, like, you know, Molotov cocktails thrown at us, and those were real. Like, they were really exploding.
Oh, wow.
The first time we did it, I couldn't believe it. They were like, okay, so this guy, his name's Chovy, he's the fire guy, and he came out, and we were shooting in Colombia, and he was like, cool, and he had this bottle and, like, lit it, and they were like, okay, action, and then we ran around the staircase, and he threw it, and I just, like, felt the heat behind me, and the irony of that is that there's one take from one camera angle where I basically, it scared me so much that I, like, left Audrey, like, in the dust. Like, I took off and I ran up these stairs and she was like, hey, thanks a lot. You're supposed to be, like, looking out for me here. I was like, I'm so sorry. Can we do that again? But, yeah, everybody really just went for it. It was a great group of actors. I mean, everybody felt really lucky to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, James does that. He creates these environments where he makes you feel like you're part of this cool club.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had a lot of say in the casting of this movie. He really wanted to get it right. He wanted it to feel like an ensemble, and he wanted, I think, people that were going to approach the material like it was real, like it was life or death. And I think he got actors that, despite that, you know, there's some campy kind of B quality to this movie, no doubt, because I think James really loves to kind of bring that into it. But at the same time, he's a very realistic type of artist, and he wants things to feel real. And so I think he got a group of actors that were willing to treat his material treat it the way that it deserves, which is really fun and really campy and really bloody, but also very, very serious at the same time.
Were you aware how funny this was at the time, or were you expecting more like on the gory side, scary? Or
I don't know. I mean, you know, James is a really funny guy. Like, just as a person, he has this really kind of twisted, dark sense of humor. And so the first time I read the script, I was laughing out loud because, like, oh, he's still finding time, like, even when the chips are down and things are just getting crazier and crazier with the heads exploding and people just going after each other, there was still room for this kind of gallows humor that kept popping up in all the scenes. But I feel like it got even funnier when we shot it. Like, just the way that some of the actors naturally brought their own essence to the roles, I feel like it made it, the humor came out more than I expected it to.
Hilarious.
Oh, cool. Oh, thanks. Good. I'm glad. That's what we like to hear.
Yeah. How was it working with Greg? I mean, anybody who's entering into this genre world knows Greg's work with Wolf Creek.
Yeah, totally. That was a big one.
You know, and very cinematic in his visual approach, very theatrical, which should not be strange to you.
Yeah.
So how was the experience of working with Greg in the visual choreography of what he had all of you doing to bring this to life?
It was great. I loved working with Greg. You know, I had obviously seen Wolf Creek, which is great. I mean, that was part of a kind of turning point for horror, I feel like, 2004, when there was this new kind of era of low-budget directors from all over the world putting their stamp on kind of the classic kind of sense of a horror movie. And he's also just a really great person to be around. Like, he's a really great leader. He has a kind of, like, relentless spirit and energy, and stays extremely positive, which is one of the kind of best things that you want from a director, is that, you know, no matter how long it's taking you to get a shot, or if a special effect isn't working quite right, or if you're running out of time and you have to start shooting because, you know, you have to start early the next day, the minute somebody starts kind of freaking out, that kind of can trickle down and kind of poison everything, and then everybody starts freaking out. But Greg was like, he always was there with a smile, a lot of energy. I think he just loves... You know, it was one of those sets where everybody just loved making movies. Like, we were all there for the same purpose because we were big movie fans and we loved making movies, and the opportunity to do something kind of different and kind of crazy with James and Greg was something that I think everybody wanted to sign up for. I mean, I haven't seen him since... I just saw him in the hallway. I don't think I've seen him since we wrapped the movie, so it's great to see him again. He's awesome, and I'm super happy for him because I think this is a movie that's going to kind of push his style even
mm-hmm.
further to new audiences.
Now, I know he storyboarded this entire film.
Yeah.
Now, you as an actor, were you privy to seeing those storyboards because of the very action-centric nature of so many of the scenes?
Yeah, I saw some of them. They showed us when we got there. And then what was also helpful was that we had this board. We kind of had this poster board mapped out that really went down, because, you know, there's so many, it's a really shot heavy movie,
yeah.
because you have 70 some characters, 80 some characters to kind of keep tabs on throughout in an hour and a half. It's a lot to do and a lot to process. So we had a kind of a master board that
mm-hmm.
showed us, like, right, this scene leads to that scene, because when you're shooting these things out of sequence, you can it can really do your head in to be like, wait, what happened in the last scene? And then where are we shooting tomorrow? And what? But they showed us the storyboards, and they put that master board up, and it made it really easy for us to kind of imagine, like, oh, okay, I see kind of stylistically what the approach mm-hmm. is for this movie. And Luis, who shot the movie, it really kind of took those storyboards, and then the way that he composed each shot, he kind of took it to like a next level from the way that it had been storyboarded. It was kind of like everything just kept ramping up when we got mm-hmm. To the point where we were shooting it. But yeah, we saw a little bit of that, and that helps you get a kind of yeah. a taste of like, oh right, I see what we're doing here. We're all on the same page. We're all kind of doing the same tone, making the same style of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Did you? Go ahead.
Michael Rooker and Adia said that they had their own input into the character and some of the things that they did. Did you have any input, maybe to your stunts?
Yeah,
or?
We got there. You know, we got there. I guess like a week or so before we started shooting, so we had some time, which mm-hmm. was really nice. Mm-hmm. Couple days where we all just kind of sat around. I remember one of the early days, like Adria and Tony and Greg and I sat down for like an hour and just kind of talked about the characters and about like, you know, how do we really sell this? Like, how do we get into these characters and making sure that they're staying true to themselves and trying to make these decisions and trying to do the right thing? And so we did have input. I mean, I don't think that too much changed. I mean, you know, James is such a good writer. He's like a great dialogue writer too. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really good at these quick, kind of quippy, fun scenes that tell you kind of everything that you need to know in a quick and short amount of time. So we didn't change a ton of dialogue stuff, but we were able to get in there and just kind of personalize everything. I feel like, you know, we didn't over rehearse anything. Mm-hmm. So you want to be able to get to set and be like, okay, so here's what we have for today, and then be like, oh well, I think that maybe I'll come in this way and do that. So there was a kind of controlled looseness to the way that we did it, where everybody kind of got to have a little bit of input, just so that we could all kind of individualize what we were doing.
What about stunts? Audrey said that they didn't want to give her a real axe,
right?
She demanded,
and she wanted to, yeah, to hold the real axe. I mean, some of this stuff was so crazy. Like, I remember the day, you know, the day where I get hung upside down. I remember showing up to set to do that, and like, you know, my stunt double did a little bit. He did some of the heavy stuff, like when he has to fall. But they put the harness on me, and they were like, "You sure you're cool with this?" And I was like, "You hang me upside down and put a plastic bag over my head, and you know, sounds great. I'll do it." I mean, I've never made a movie quite like this before, so I don't want to come this far only to back out of some of the heavier stuff. So it was just, I mean, it becomes kind of an adventure. And, you know, for me, like, I got into movies, like, I loved movies as a kid because, you know, I started watching action movies and I started running around my backyard and making up movies in my head and reenacting my favorite action movies. So suddenly finding yourself in South America, you know, being hung upside down and doing these crazy fight scenes, like, it really does become kind of fun. Like, you kind of can't believe it. You go home to the hotel covered in, you know, fake blood, and your head sticks to the pillow and you're trying to go to sleep from it, but you think, gosh, what a crazy thing that we're doing. So yeah, we all went for it. I mean, everybody does some pretty intense physical stuff in the movie.
Well, one of my favorite things that you do, and thank you, because and thanks to James, because I now have a new purpose for a desktop scotch tape dispenser. I have to ask, what is the best way to hold that in positioning to get the most effective?
Well,
you
definitely
know?
want to make sure you don't break it. So you do want to get I think the best way is the way that Mike does it in the movies, to get a kind of good grip of each end, and then use the kind of center, which is probably the heaviest piece for the point of impact.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, was it at an actual desktop one, the one that is weighted with sand?
It's one with the weight of the sand. That's the idea, is that it's one of the really heavy ones, which is why it's able to do such damage. Because it's not what you would think would be the go-to weapon for such an extreme assault.
Weapon of opportunity. Right?
Yeah, totally. That's the thing about the movie, is you just kind of like, you see what you've got closest to you and like what's going to help you survive the most. So everybody just kind of goes and grabs, like you know, like you have like when McGinley goes in and grabs his meat cleaver and just goes into the kitchen and gets anything he can. It's like people just start getting whatever they can to survive.
But, you know, a meat cleaver is obvious.
That is very obvious.
A scotch
tape
dispenser
is not what you would think.
Is,
I feel like that's Mike's style, is to kind of do the unexpected.
But, you know, it just shows Mike can think under duress.
He does. That, if anything, I mean, he's, you know, the fact that he realizes that he tries to cut his bomb out before anybody knows what's going on. Nobody even knows where he's going. He just takes off for the X-Acto knife to try and get it out. You know, he definitely, I think, thinks on his feet.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to keep the alebrije, the corn man?
I didn't get to keep one. I wanted one. It was so cool. It's funny because you read a thing like that, you know, you read that in the script and you're like, I wonder what it's going to look like. And they tried a couple. And I remember one day, in fact, they made one out of a husk of corn instead. And it was like this kind of, it almost looked like the Blair Witch Project thing. Like it was big and it was this like weird kind of symbol. And we all looked at it and we were like, that's not right. And then James looked at it and was like, no, this isn't what I envisioned. It's got to be the corn cob and some like googly eyes. And so I think James drew one. And then they modeled it after that, if I'm not mistaken. But it was a cool design.
It was awesome.
Because you also got to be down in the streets with the Colombian people.
Yeah, we got to shoot some of that stuff in the opening in this neighborhood. I can't even remember what the neighborhood was called. But it's part of this area where there's almost kind of like this like tent city that's built up on this hill where mm-hmm. people have started building their own houses mm-hmm. kind of off the grid. And we were shooting around there. It was really interesting. I mean, everybody that I met was super, super sweet and generous. And I think, you know, they think they're making more movies there now. And everybody was so happy that we were there. It was a really cool place to film.
And nobody else in the cast got to film there.
Yeah, I know. I was the only one. Everybody else was stuck in the in the office building the whole time. I got to take a few trips out, which was fun.
Do you miss saying lines that run 100 miles an hour just as required in Aaron Sorkin stuff?
Oh, yeah. yes and no. There are days where,
speak so fast
you have to kind of do, there's something, you have to just to fit the show into the hour, you have to say the dialogue really, really quick. But, no, doing Aaron Sorkin dialogue is, I mean, that's such a gift, you know, that's the kind of thing that you think of a few years later and you go, I can't believe that I got to do that, that, you know, that was so cool. But I like all, you know, I like all kinds of styles, and I like stories too where less is said. You know, I did a lot of theater, you know, before I started doing film and TV, and so I'm used to things being really dialogue heavy. So that was kind of a natural progression. But I also like doing movies where it's more about what isn't said than what is said. I like both kind of styles.
So what's next for you after this? Because you know this is going to open to great acclaim.
Number one,
it's written by Gunn, directed by the guy who brought us Wolf Creek.
Yeah,
it's got
a cool
you,
combo.
It's got Tony, it's got McGinley, it's got Rooker.
I mean, when you've got McGinley and Rooker alone are, you know, worth the price of the admission in my book. But yeah, it's an incredible group of actors to be a part of. You know, I remember when I signed on, I think there was only, I only knew of a few people. I think I knew of, I knew that Melanie Diaz was involved, I knew that Tony was involved, and I knew that that McGinley was involved. And that, I mean, alone, I was like, whoa, that's amazing, I can't wait to see who else that they get. But yeah, I mean, it's always kind of the crazy game of this business, is you never really know what's going to happen mm-hmm. and how are things going to get received, and you just kind of try to hold on and do the work that you like and hope for the best. I shot two independent movies last year. One movie's called The Miseducation of Cameron Post, and that stars Chloe Moretz. And then I just shot a movie in Seattle with Melanie Linsky. Mm-hmm. And those are lower budget affairs. Those are kind of character driven dramas. And so you never know what's going to become of those, if they're going to go the festival route or if they're going to get picked up before that. But that's kind of as far as I can see, is that I shot those two movies, and you know, I kind of just take things one step at a time and see what scripts come my way, and I don't know what I'll do next. I just got to do another show on Broadway over the summer. It was my first play in 5 years, and that was amazing. That was awesome, and totally terrifying in its own way. I was like, God, now I understand why people do less theater as they get older. They go to movies because it's easier. It's not quite as hard as getting up on stage every night for several hours.
I'm a Broadway fan, so you know, I'm a big fan of your Green Day stuff.
Thanks.
So I was going to ask you when you got to come back to my world.
Yeah,
you just did. Huh? You just
I did. Well, you know, it's funny, but the play I did was much different. It was a okay. classic American play mm. that was written in the '40s, so didn't quite have the rock and roll energy that American Idiot had. But I would love to do another musical someday. You know, it's all kind of about timing and finding the right project and stuff like that. So I'm kind of in one of those places right now where I don't have anything. There's nothing kind of on the horizon mm-hmm. for me to film or do right now. I'm just kind of wait to see what comes my way.
Well, they left it open for a sequel, like, at the end.
Yeah, they, it's definitely open-ended.
Are you optioned for a...
No, I didn't do anything that, you know, in terms of, like, signing on for that. I think everybody just kind of wanted to make this one movie and then see how it goes and see, you know, what kind of reaction it gets. And I mean, who the heck knows? It could be a cool thing to do, to recreate, to put the blood spattered tie back on.
The franchise, maybe, yeah.
Do you know? I mean, it definitely has that potential, I think. When you have a movie like this, it is very universal, and you could just keep kind of adding on to the mythology of it and kind of opening up the story even more. So
a lot of the movies in the vein of that always come back in the sequel with, like, all the winners versus each other.
Right,
you know?
Totally. Like, that's the next natural progression.
Yeah. Because we saw,
like,
all the monitors.
I know. It just keeps zooming out and out and out. You're like, oh my god, how many people have they done this? Around
so Mike could be going on a quest.
It could be kind of like, you know, Survivor, how they had the finalists. And your favorite of, you know, the favorite survivors from season one come back.
Hook up James Gunn with Mark Burnett and see what we get.
Right, and then see what you get. Yeah, exactly. It could be a TV franchise for all we know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, good to see y'all.
Thank you
so much.